Now that brings us to Angus Gillies. And Angus has put a new Puka Puka together looking at 501s. But Angus has some track record as a writer, journalist and TV producer. He's from a very talented family too, because he has cousins working in the media, one of which, Amanda fronts a program which is always interesting, called The Detail. And by coincidence, I was listening to The Detail on my way home late last night on the radio, and it was about the book that her cousin, Angus, had written. So wonderful to kōrero and meet with you, Angus. Mihana Kākwe, Chief. Thanks a lot, man, for the work you've been doing. Angus has also written biographies on John Rowles and sports people as well. So you got a bit of skin in the game, eh, Angus? Are you a Gizzy guy?
Doing it well. I am a Gizzy guy. I think I might have shared a rugby books with you once or twice back at Carlow Park. Would you be there in the latter years of Carlow Park?
I'm 100 years
old.
Was
that before your time?
No, I'm 100 years old, so I probably was. I used to do broadcasting up on the top of the railway stand. Do you remember that little box on the roof there?
Yeah. And they'd have games like Auckland v Manly and Kiwis v England and things like that.
Mate, you must be nearly 100 years old yourself.
I am, actually.
Yeah, good on you. Hey, well, thanks for all the mahi that you're doing, and your cousin's a wonderful presenter, so cool to have a kōrero. And I've seen the book, but I haven't read it, and I will now that I'm having a yarn with you. Angus's new book, The Reluctant Returnees, explores the experience of deportees sent from Oz back home here and the impact of the Australian 501 policy on organised crime and methamphetamine use and the pathways to successful reintegration. And for some, redemption. It's been damn hard for these guys coming back, but it's been harder for us in many ways having to accommodate them because, you know, they have some of them, not all of them, but noted sort of crime connections, and we've seen the establishment of gangs and pathways for drugs that didn't used to seemingly exist, Angus. After speaking with so many deportees, what was your biggest misconception about 501 returnees that your research challenged, Angus?
Well, I suppose the biggest thing, Dale, is that, you know, all the 501s are bad eggs, or a lot of the 501s are bad eggs. The change to that policy by Australia did change the criminal landscape here, but it wasn't all 501s. There was a small number of 501s who were big names in the Australian organised crime scene who came back, and they were like gang leaders, gang enforcers, gang secretaries, those sorts of things. You know, the motorcycle clubs in Aussie, and they brought with them a level of kind of business acumen, and they had international contacts and what the cops call trade craft and encryption technology craft, where they could set up methamphetamine businesses, and they were bringing in industrial levels of volumes of methamphetamine. But a lot of the 501s are guys, you know, who hadn't even, well, not a lot of them, but quite a few of the 501s were people who hadn't even committed a crime or been convicted of a crime. They just got sent back on bad character because they were associated with the motorcycle clubs and things like that. So a lot of the 501s have been you know, making good progress, reintegrating into New Zealand society, and a lot of them came back kind of broken because they felt like refugees going back to a place that they'd left behind, and their whole family was still in Australia. So, you know, when Australia is taking all these Kiwis over there, you know, like they're taking their whole families over there, not everyone's going to be a success. There's going to be a few who stumble and fall and whatnot. And those guys have been plucked out of the new life in Aussie and sent back. And the guys I spoke to say that they suffer from PTSD from that whole process of being sent back. And they get back, and unfortunately they're resentful, you know?
I can understand that. Most of them, well, many of them, have stuff or connections. Whānau networks have disintegrated, and they're effectively just dumped on the street here by Australia. Look, I like Australia, but also some of their ways seem draconian, and this 501 policy, especially that character test, some people, as you say, weren't involved in high-end organised crime, just were appearing before the courts in Australia more than was deemed to be acceptable. And so, you know, given the flick back home, what should we make of their policy, the 501 policy? Should we sort of note that it's understandable and don't blame them, or say that it is hugely unfair on those who have been deported, but also on us having to take what they consider to be their riffraff and house them at our place?
Peter Dutton said it was taking out the trash, and, you know, that was, it's been roundly condemned. But to me, I think the 501 policy was a betrayal of that ANZAC spirit that we're supposed to share. And they have changed the criminal landscape here because of those few guys who came back and set up those, you know, highly business-minded Australian gangs and quite ruthless. And that changed the landscape here. But so it is unfair on a lot of these guys being sent back, but it's also, as you say, unfair on New Zealand because when these guys came back here, I mean, look at the country now. It's, you know, from 2014 to 2026, meth is just, you know, washed through the whole country. There are a lot of families out there who know the story and have members of their family who have succumbed to the methamphetamine. And that's probably the, you know, the two main problems, I think.
And we saw the glossy pictures of the Comancheros, but that's just an example. How many 501s have been sent home, Angus?
Oh, there was, well, they were sending home about 30 a month when Albanese got in. I don't know the exact number, but it would be thousands now, I would say. Probably a couple of thousand, 2,000 or 3,000. I'm not great with figures, Dale, but there's been a fair few now. But it's, as I say, it's only a small number. And the other thing that's worth mentioning is that the we get these figures of recidivist offenders, but the 501s, a lot of them aren't recidivist because they're sent back with having never committed a crime. So their first crime they commit in New Zealand is their first offence. And the and a lot of them would commit crimes in New Zealand that they would never have imagined committing in Aussie, because when they get into the detention centres, they're surrounded by people who are of all shades of criminal, you know, from they might be bad character, so they're just associating with people, haven't committed a crime, right up to murderers and whatnot. So people get into that influence, and suddenly, before they know it, they're in a gang, or they're committing crimes they wouldn't have, you know, dreamed of committing 18 months ago, because this process of deportation is so traumatic to them. That's the word that they use. So, yeah, there's you know, probably been 2,000 or 3,000, but there should have been they've been sending back Aussies, basically, guys who have been over there since they were 1 and 2 years old in a lot of cases.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of them are Māori and Pacifica too. Has there been any data compiled about the cultural backgrounds or ethnic makeup of the deportees block, if you will, Angus?
Well, some people have said it's a racist policy, because the Māori and Pacifica make up such a small percent of the population, but they make up a high percent of the people being deported. And one thing I found interesting as a Pākehā kind of talking to people on that was that a few of the people that have been sent back didn't really know anything about their whakapapa or their Māori background. And they didn't find any of that stuff out until they were deported back to New Zealand and were in prison and did a Māori Pathways course in prison. And to them, it was like a born-again revelation or something along those lines. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I found that pretty interesting. So suddenly, they've got this connection of who they are. And but when they were over in Aussie, growing up in Aussie, they were kind of divorced or disconnected from all that.
Interesting. How did you find them, and how willing were they to talk to you, Angus?
Well, first, I had co-written a book called Far North, which you may have seen the TV version of with Temuera Morrison and Robin Malcolm.
Yeah, sure.
About that 500kg bust.
That's right.
Up north. And during the process of that, I'd put out requests to talk to all the people who were involved in that, all the people who were involved in that syndicate or crew, drug crew. And two people got back to me, one who was the guy called Marvel in the program, Stevie Cullen, and I went to Nafa prison and talked to him. And then another guy, Callan Hughes, or CJ, and he was only very briefly mentioned. He was on the outskirts of that. He had been in prison with one of the guys, not in prison, well, yeah, in prison and in detention with one of the guys in that crew. And he got back to me, and I started interviewing CJ about his life, because what happened to him when he came back, because he came back, everyone got busted in the Far North 500kg thing, and then he got involved with that same group of people after that, and it's what happened after, because that drug crew just kept rolling along, like that was just a glitch to them, they just carried on. So I started interviewing him and got his story, and then at a certain point thought, I'll need to broaden this out and talk to other 501s and see, and because that guy CJ Cullen is still in jail, and he had a mate, Ant Miller, who had come back and started a scaffolding business, and he was employing 501, so that was kind of an interesting person to talk to. And then I spoke to a few other people who are doing great work now helping reintegrate 501s into society.
Well, it's amazing that you're able to get access to these guys. There are some stories of redemption. Last night, your cousin was on her program, The Detail, was talking about a bloke who came back, or maybe it was you, Angus, set up a scaffolding business, employed a lot of 501s, kept the fact that he was a returnee somewhat under wraps, but then... I don't know, perhaps unwittingly blew his own cover on a report on TV3.
That's right, yeah. A mate of mine, Mitch McCann, did the story, and Anthony Miller was the guy. He agreed to do the interview, you know, as like a spokesperson for 501s, but he said to me later that he was caught out in a lie because he'd told everyone that he was dealing with that he was actually just in a quiet patch in the mines over in Western Australia, and he had worked in the mines, but he had told his neighbours and his people he had contracts with and whatnot that he was just having a break from the mines and, you know, doing a bit of a business in between. But then he appeared on TV talking about the 501s, but he said he got caught spinning a yarn, but he was doing it for the right reasons, and it actually helped his business because people respected that he was doing this work for his community. So it had a good spin-off for him.
Based on your findings, Angus, and the work that you've done in the book, what practical changes do you think our country should make to better support 501 returnees while also reducing the harm caused by, you know, the drug trade and organised crime that some of them are involved in? How can we do better at our end?
Well, how to do better for the 501s, everyone spoke to me that what is needed is similar to what you have with groups like Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, where you have actual alcoholics or actual drug addicts talking with the guys who are coming in, or the, you know, people who are coming in needing treatment. With the 501s, you need actual 501s who have walked the walk to come through and talk the talk. You know, it's not much good having people who have book learnt what it's all about, trying to help out. You need those people who have the actual lived experience of being a 501 and that been through that trauma, and they call it PTSD, to help the other 501s. And as far as the drug trade, I mean, it's gone beyond. And Greg Williams, the National Organized Crime Group head, says in the book that it's gone beyond 501s, the drug problem in New Zealand now. It possibly would have, well, probably would have got here eventually anyway, because New Zealanders pay such a high amount for drugs that anyone looking for a good, market is going to come here eventually. But so now we need to stop the gangs that are already part of the landscape now, like the Aussie gangs. Before, as you know, Dale, we were mainly Mongrel Mob and Black Power, but these Aussie gangs came in with that business acumen and kind of more routine kind of ruthlessness, I suppose, and they've kind of imprinted themselves on our society, and we need to kind of cut off all those international links. And the other thing is, I always think it's so simplistic, it's probably not achievable, but remember when we had the team of 5 million and we had to wear our masks and whatnot? The team of 5 million just decides, hey, we don't want to do methamphetamine. That seems to be the main drug that's causing the problems.
It sure is. Thanks for the work you've been doing in this space, and not just with this book, but with previous books. And also pass on my regards to you. Kazi, I think, does a wonderful job of converting some of your work into lovely podcasts and the like on The Detail today with us, Angus Gillies. Enjoyed having a cordial
Thanks,
with you,
Dale.
Angus. Thanks again for your cordial and reminding me of the good old days back at Carlow Park.
Carlow.
Good on you, I guess.
All
Thanks,
right,
mate.
mate.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, mate.
Kia ora.
See ya.